Okay, and welcome back. What are we calling it? We're calling it Chapter 6 of Dracula. Welcome back to Classic Breakdown. For anybody who's never been here before, it's a bit of a ramble. It's a bit of a drag. Has he looked at it before? No, he hasn't. The text is entirely new before him, and you'll be able to tell that very instantly. There's no professionalism here. There's me looking out of the window, looking at the clouds, looking at the trees. The trees are quite lively. We've got a church and a graveyard in the background. We've got honeysuckle, we've got clematis, we've got small garden, and we've got lots of support on my other channel, so thanks for that. Anyone joining me here, thank you for that. And the game's afoot. We'll see what happens. Perhaps I've been a little bit strong in my criticism of YouTube, but there we go. If you can dish it out, you can take it. Can I take it? Not really. Mina Murray's journal. Mina Murray's journal. She's one of the two ladies, two birds, two chicks, who appear later on in the story. I don't think there's much to tell them apart. You can't get a Rizzler between them. A Rizzler, thin cigarette paper. Green Rizzler. Packet of green Rizzlers, please. And Quarter of Golden Virginia. Yeah, lovely. Right, 24th of July, Whitby. Whitby, lovely place, not very far from here. Nice fish and chips. The Abbey is there. James Cook, I think, was born there or near there, was he? Correct me if I'm wrong. Don't correct me if I'm wrong. I won't be able to take it. I've had so many reversals. I'll burst in tears and run out of the room. I'll have a fit of the vapours. Might need a brandy. Brandy, the solution to every Victorian and Edwardian problem. Apart from opium, of course, and cocaine in the soft drinks. 24th of July, Whitby. Lucy met me at the station, looking sweet. This is a woman speaking. That's why I've gone so deep and meaningful. Lucy met me at the station, looking sweeter and lovelier than ever. Can't be bothered. And we drove up to the house at the Crescent in which they have rooms. This is a lovely place. Yes, I can. The little river, the Esk, runs through a deep valley which broadens out as it comes near the harbour. A great viaduct runs across with high piers through which the view seems somehow further away than it really is. It's like wing mirrors, isn't it? Remember, objects may appear closer or further away than they actually are. Warning, the valley is beautifully green, and it is so steep that when you are on the high land on either side, you look right across it, unless you are near enough to see down. Well, there's a lesson in distance and optics and perception, spatial perception. Thanks, Mina. She's doing an OU degree in it. The houses of the old town, the side away from us, are all red-roofed and seem piled up, one over the another, yes, doesn't say that here, and seem piled up one over the other anyhow, like the pictures we see of Nuremberg. Ah, it's a happening town a few decades later. Right over the town is the ruin of Whitby Abbey, which was sacked by the Danes, and which is the scene of part of Marmion, which apparently is a Walter Scott novel, where the girl was built up in the wall, walled up in the build. Who knows which is the correct thing to say? Where the girl was built up in the wall. It is a most noble ruin of immense size and full of beautiful and romantic bits. And full of beautiful and romantic bits. There is a legend that a white lady is seen in one of the windows, and I think there we have to be cautious in this current age. There's a white lady, and I think it's like a white lady as a ghost, not a white lady in terms of her ethnicity or Caucasianicity, but she's a white lady, like a grey lady that, wanders through the dress circle of Wolverhampton Civic Theatre. The grey lady is out tonight with a filet of fish and a strawberry milkshake. She walks the upper circle. Your battery of your Kindle is running low. Please charge your Kindle. Sod off. Between it and the town there is another church, the parish one, round which is a big graveyard all full of tombstones. This is, to my mind, the nicest spot in Whitby, for it lies right over the town and has a full view of the harbour and all up the bay to where the headland, called Kettleness, stretches out into the sea. It descends so steeply over the harbour that part of the bank has fallen away, and some of the graves have been destroyed. In one place, part of the stonework of the grave stretches out over the sandy pathway far below. There are walks. Dear, bit froggy. There are walks with seats beside them through the churchyard, and people go and sit there all day looking, all day long. And people go and sit there all day long looking at the beautiful view and enjoying the breeze. My mind really isn't on this. I shall come and sit here often myself and work. What sort of work does she do? A little bit of scrimshaw, perhaps, a little bit of whittling. On a walrus tusk, why not? No shame in it. Keeps you off the streets, keeps Mina off the streets. Or perhaps, you know, she's making macrame owls. That's always a good thing to be doing. Perhaps that comes a bit later in the world of hobbycraft. Indeed, I am writing now with my book on my knee, and listening to the talk of three old men who are sitting beside me. They seem to do nothing all day but sit here and talk. Yeah, I'm the fourth old man. It's all I do. The harbour lies below me with, on the far side, one long granite wall stretching out into the sea with a curve outwards at the end of it, in the middle of which is a lighthouse. A heavy sea wall runs along outside of it. On the near side, the sea wall makes an elbow crooked inversely, like a sort of flamingo's knees. Possibly, no, the opposite of a flamingo's knees. Like my knees. I'd never really thought that your knees go one way and your elbows go the other, but there it is. It's a eureka moment for a total idiot. And its end, too, has a lighthouse. Between the two piers there is a narrow opening into the harbour, which then suddenly widens. Otherwise it wouldn't be a harbour, I suppose. It is nice at high water. But when the tide is out, it shoals away to nothing, and there is merely the stream of the Esk running between banks of sand with rocks here and there. Outside the harbour, on this side, there rises for about half a mile a great reef, the sharp of which runs straight out from behind the south lighthouse. At the end of it is a buoy with a bell, or a buoy, as I believe. Some Americans have it, which swings in bad weather. Don't we all, you know, sometimes, anyway, and sends in a mournful sound on the wind. They have a legend here that when a ship is lost, bells are heard out at sea. I must ask the old man about this. Oh, he's coming this way. He is a funny old man. He must be awfully old. He's possibly 58, for his face is gnarled and twisted like the bark of a tree. He tells me that he is nearly 100, and that he was a sailor in the Greenland fishing fleet when Waterloo was fought. He is, I'm afraid, a very sceptical person. Oh dear, shoot him now. For when I asked him about the bells at sea, he said he preferred Johnny Walker and the White Lady at the Abbey. He said very brusquely, here we go, here's a sort of yokel local. Yorkshire, so I suppose he's like, I wouldn't fash myself about them, miss. Them things be all wore out. Mind, I don't say that they never was, but I do say that they wasn't in my time. They be all very well for comers and trippers and the like, but not for a nice young lady like you. Them feet folks from York and Leeds, feet folks, day trippers, I suppose, that be always eating cured herrings and drinking tea and looking out to buy cheap jet. Cheap jet can be found in Whitby. Is it washed up? Jet, the mineral. Jet jewellery was very popular, wasn't it, among the Victorians? Mourning jewellery. Always eating cured herrings and drinking tea. Battery level is low. Your battery is running low. Please charge your Kindle. God. See, I could grab my charger, plug it in, but then I've got a wire to get in the way and it's all... You know, if it stops, it stops, and we start again next time. Anyway, there we are. Let's see how long it goes for. Maybe if I turn off the light and then put out the light. Anyway, these day trippers are always eating cured herrings and drinking tea and looking out to buy cheap jet. Would Creed ought? I wonder myself who'd be bothered telling lies to them, even the newspapers, which is full of fool talk. Even the newspapers, which is full of fool talk. Now then, there's a 100-year-old man who remembers or was born round about the Battle of Waterloo. He knew that the newspapers were full of fool talk. Today, the average credulous person goes, oh yeah, anything the newspapers say must be true. What's happened? What's changed? Brainwashing? Do you think it's brainwashing? Or do you think it's hype? Oh, who knows? I thought he would be a good person to learn interesting things from, so I asked him if he would mind telling me something about the whale fishing in the old days. Would you mind telling me about the whale fishing in the old days? Is it true that they're bigger than a pilchard? He was just settling himself to begin when the clock struck six, whereupon he laboured to get up and said, I must gang Ageinwood's home now, miss. My granddaughter doesn't like to be kept waiting when the tea is ready, for it takes me time to crammel aboon the grease, for there be a many of them, and miss, I lack belly timber sairly by the clock. No idea. He hobbled away, and I could see him hurrying, as well as he could, down the steps. It's not too easy for a 100-year-old man. The steps are a great feature on the place. They lead from the town to the church. There are hundreds of them, I do not know how many, and they wind up in a delicate curve. The slope is so gentle that a horse could easily walk up and down them. I think they must originally have had something to do with the abbey. I shall go home too. Lucy went out visiting. Lucy Westenra, her pal, visiting with her mother. And as they were only duty calls, I did not go. 1st of August. I came up here an hour ago with Lucy, and we had a most interesting talk with my old friend and the two others who always come and join him. He is evidently the Sir Oracle of them, and I should think must have been in his time a most dictatorial person. He will not admit anything and downfaces everybody. If he can't out-argue them, he bullies them and then takes their silence for agreement with his views. Lucy was looking sweetly pretty in her white lawn frock. She has got a beautiful colour since she has been here. I noticed that the old man did not lose any time in coming and sitting near her when we sat down. She's so sweet with old people. I think they all fell in love with her on the spot. Even my old man succumbed and did not contradict her, but gave me double share instead. I got him on the subject of the legends, and he went off at once into a sort of sermon. I must try to remember it and put it down. Now then, the ability of sort of Victorians and our former human being ancestors. I suppose ancestors are always going to be former. Our ancestors, our antecedents. They could probably listen to a conversation and write most of it down because their memories hadn't been eroded and degraded by TikTok. And the spoon-feeding of sort of tabloids and TV programmes which required absolutely no... Anyway, am I turning into an old curmudgeon like this 100-year-old bloke who goes on to say, it be all fool talk, lock, stock and barrel, that's what it be and nowt else. These bans and wafts and bell ghosts and barges and bogles and all anent them is only fit to set bairns and dizzy women a-beldering. They be nowt but air blebs. They and all grims and signs and warnings be all invented by parsons and Ilson Burke bodies and railway touters to skeer and scunner halflings and to get folks to do something that they don't other incline to. It makes me ireful to think of them. Why, it's them that, not content with printing lies on paper and preaching them out of pulpits, does want to be cutting them on the tombstones. Look here all around you in what et ye will. All them steens, holding up their heads as well as they can out of their pride, is a cant simply tumbling down with the weight of the lies wrote on them. Here lies the body, or sacred to the memory, wrote on all of them, and yet in nigh half of them there bain't no bodies at all, and the memories of them bain't cared a pinch of snuff about, much less sacred. Lies, all of them, nothing but lies of one kind or another, my gog. But it'll be a queer scouderment at the day of judgment when they come tumbling up in their death sarks, all grouped together and trying to drag their tombstones with them to prove how good they was, some of them trimling and dithering with their hands that dozened and slippery from lying in the sea that they can't even keep their grip on them. Grip on them, I guess. I mean, I could see from the old fellow's self-satisfied air and the way in which he looked round for the approval of his cronies that he was showing off. So I put in a word to keep him going. "Oh, Mr. Swales, you can't be serious. Surely these tombstones are not all wrong?"
"Yablins, there may be a poorish few not wrong, saving where they make out the people too good. For there be folk that do think a barn bowl be like the sea, if only it be their own. The whole thing be only lies. Now look you here, you come here a stranger, and you see this Kirkgarth."
I nodded, for I thought it better to assent, though I didn't quite understand his dialect. I knew it had something to do with the church. "Kirk Church, you see how clever I am." He went on,
"And you can say that all these stains be a boon folk that haped here, snod and snog."
I assented again.
"Then that be just where the lie comes in. Why, there be scores of these lay beds that be tomb as Dunn's old backer box on Friday night."
"Or old Dunn's backer box, tobacco box on Friday night." He nudged one of his companions, and they all laughed.
"And my Gog, how could they be otherwise? Look at that one. The aftest abaft the buyer bank. Read it."
"Beer. Buyer." I went over and read, "Edward Spenslar, Master Mariner, murdered by pirates off the coast of Andres, April 1854, aged 30. When I came back, Mr. Swales went on.
"Who brought him home, I wonder, to hap him here? Murdered off the coast of Andres, and you can say that his body lay under? Why, I could name ye a dozen whose bones lie in the Greenland seas above."
He pointed northwards,
"or where the currents may have drifted them. There be the stains around ye. Ye can, with your young eyes, read the small print of the lies from here. This Braithwaite Lowry, I knew his father, lost in the Lively off Greenland in 20, or
Andrew Woodhouse, drowned in the same seas in 1777, or John Paxton, drowned off Cape Farewell a year later, or old John Rawlings, whose grandfather sailed with me, drowned in the Gulf of Finland in 50.
Do ye think that all these men will have to make a rush to Whitby when the trumpet sounds?"
Sorry, I just stopped because there was a big bang downstairs. "I hope everything's all right."
"I have me anthurums about it. I tell ye, when they got here, they'd be jomlin' and jostling one another that way that it would be like a fight up on the ice in the old days. When we'd be at one another from daylight to dark and trying to cut up our cats by the Aurora Borealis and trying to tie up our cuts by the Aurora Borealis."
This was evidently local pleasantry, for the old man cackled over it and his cronies joined in with gusto. "But," I said, "surely you are not correct, for you start on the assumption that all the poor people, all their spirits, will have to take their tombstones with them on the Day of Judgment. Do you think that will be really necessary?"
"Well, what else be their tombstones for? Answer me that, miss."
"To please their relatives, I suppose."
"To please their relatives, you suppose?" This he said with intense scorn. "How will it please their relatives to know that lies is wrote over them, and that everybody in the place knows that they be lies?"
He pointed to a stone at our feet, which had been laid down as a slab, on which the seat was rested, close to the edge of the cliff.
"Read the lies on that rough stone," he said.
The letters were upside down to me from where I sat, but Lucy was more opposite to them, so she leant over and read. "Sacred to the memory of George Cannon, who died in the hope of a glorious resurrection, on July 29th, 1873, falling from the rocks at Kettleness. This tomb was erected by his sorrowing mother to her dearly beloved son. He was the only son of his mother, and she was a widow. Really, Mr. Swales, I don't see anything very funny in that." She spoke her comment very gravely and somewhat severely.
"You don't see aught funny? But that's because you don't go on. The sorrowing mother was a hellcat that hated him because he was a screw."
"Yeah. Quality work at a quality price."
"You don't see aught funny? But that's because you don't go on. The sorrowing mother was a hellcat that hated him because he was a crooked. A regular lamater he was. And he hated her so that he committed suicide. In order that she mightn't get an insurance she put on his life. He blew nigh the top of his head off with an old musket that they had for scaring crows with. 'Twarn't for crows then, for it brought the clegs and the doubts to him. That's the way he fell off the rocks. And as to hopes of a glorious resurrection, I've often heard him say myself that he hoped he'd go to hell, for his mother was so pious that she'd be sure to go to heaven, and he didn't want to addle where she was. Now isn't that staying at any rate? He hammered it with his stick as he spoke. A pack of lies, and won't it make Gabriel keckle when Geordie comes panting at the grease, with the tombstone balanced on his hump, and asks to be took as evidence? I did not know what to say, but Lucy turned the conversation, as she said, rising up. Oh, why did you tell us of this? It's my favourite seat, and I cannot leave it. And now I must go on sitting over the grave of a suicide. Now I find I must go on sitting over the grave of a suicide.
That won't harm ye, my pretty, and it may make poor Geordie gladsome to have so trim a lass sitting on his lap. That won't hurt ye. Why, I've sat here off and on for nigh 20 years past, and it hasn't done me no harm. Don't ye fash about them as lies under ye, or that doesn't lie there either. It'll be time for ye to be getting scart, when ye see the tombstones all run away with, and the place as bare as a stubble field. There's the clock, and I must gang my service to ye, ladies. And off he hobbled.
Lucy and I sat a while, and it was all so beautiful before us that we took hands as we sat, and she told me all over again about Arthur and their coming marriage. That made me just a little heartsick, for I haven't heard from Jonathan for a whole month.
Jonathan, yeah.
Oh, what's happened to him?
Quite bad things, I think. Do you remember?
Go back to chapter one.
Yeah, when he meets the Count.
The same day, I came up here alone, for I'm very sad. There was no letter for me. I hope there cannot be anything the matter with Jonathan. The clock has just struck 9. I see the light scattered all over the town, sometimes in rows where the streets are, and sometimes singly. They run right up the Esk and die away in the curve of the valley. To my left, the view is cut off by a black line of roof of the old house next to the abbey. The sheep and lambs are bleating in the fields away behind me. There is a clatter of donkeys' hoofs up the paved road below. The band on the pier is playing a harsh waltz in good time. And further along the quay there is a Salvation Army meeting in a back street. Neither of the bands hears the other. But up here, I hear and see them both. I wonder where Jonathan is, and if he is thinking of me. I wish he were here. And there we are. Yeah, that's the... That is the conclusion of 2, a part of chapter 6, which is Mina's journal. So Mina is the girlfriend, the affianced of Jonathan, who's just been out doing his solicitor's duty with the Count. That makes Lucy Weston rather than the actual resident of Whitby, or their, you know, over-summering there. In Whitby with her mother. So that's the Westonra household in Whitby, and Lucy's just there to forget about the absence of Jonathan. Is that right? Answers on a postcard, please, to the CEO of YouTube. Bitter? Moi? Certainly not. And there we are. That's a resuming Dracula with, I hope, a degree of fluidity. Well, worse things happen at sea, is that 100-year-old bloke just said, you know, they're all not under their graves where they should be, but they're all in Davy Jones's locker. Yeah, that's a sort of little bit of a comic interlude with a rustic before things get dark again, I guess. So hopefully, I think we get a few more journals. And, we get Dr. Seward's diary, don't we? Yes, he's... is he not one of the... Yeah, Dr. Seward, I think he runs the loony bin. Is it near Whitby or is it somewhere else? I simply forget. I've read it a couple of times, but it always kind of disappears like the morning mist in a Hammer horror film as the mist curls round the gravestones. And it's like that. Peter Cushing, Christopher Lee. You can't beat them. And of course, the earlier Draculas with Bela Lugosi. They're well worth digging out, and I'm surprised, you know, it's interesting, isn't it? But I think films of a certain age should have come into the public domain. I think the copyright on films used to be only, is it 50 years? But somehow they don't get distributed. You can't get hold of them. They're certainly not free. There's not an archive, because the moment Hollywood made brilliant black and white horror films from the 30s available, it would show the total lack of artistry of the stuff that's currently available. You'd just be blown away by what they could do with their technology then, which was primitive, the acting, the lighting, so no wonder they don't want to let people access this stuff easily. If you can access this stuff easily, let me know where I can find it, because I'd love to get hold of those films for nothing on a sort of Hollywood archive. Be great. Is it James Whale? Is he the guy who did all those? Yeah, I think he was. Anyway, thanks for tuning in. A bit of a ramble, bit of a sort of, bit of a dog's breakfast. But if you like it, stay tuned for the next one. Subscribe, and I'm sure a bell will go off in your phone or iPad. Or if you're particularly into, you know, the new incoming AI revolution, you'll have had your cranium chipped. Good luck with that. I'm sure it'll work out very well. So stay tuned. Thanks for listening. Take care, everybody. Bye.